This is Kathy bringing you the news from the News Gazette for Thursday, the 13th of February. And starting with the headline on the front page. Go figure. Thanks a million, alums. His college golf teammates hold the Illini records for most times named Big Ten Player of the Year, Steve Stricker, and Coach of the Year, Mike Small. Now, Don Edwards has a school best of his own, the largest gift ever given by a U of I trustee, which includes a $1 million for Small's program. Edward Jeff D'Alessio crunches the numbers. $10 million. Amount of the gift from trustees chairman Don from 88 in finance and wife Ann Edwards 1988 accounting, which includes $2 million for Geis College of Business merit scholarships and $5 million for Geis faculty and initiatives connected with the Discovery Partners Institute. 4. Donors whose gifts this past 6 months combined to cover a third of the $30 million cost of renovating and expanding the Ubin basketball complex. The Edwards' pledge of $2 million matches a gift from an anonymous former Illini. Also pitching in, the family of John and Ann Dossey for $5 million and Dennis and Catherine Swanson for $1 million. Two for $250 million. U of I colleges that got new names after nine-figure gifts the last 3 years. Geis Business, named in 2017 after $150 million donors Larry and Beth Geis, the couple behind the largest individual gift in school history, and the Granger College of Engineering, named in 2019 after the deceased alum William Granger, whose foundation gave $100 million. And speaking of the Discovery Partners Institute, this is a release from Springfield. Governor J.B. Pritzker on Wednesday touted statewide benefits he said will result from a $500 million state dollar investment in 15 hubs of a University of Illinois-led public-private research institute network. Pritzker, a Democrat, announced at a Chicago news conference on the site of one of the future developments that the state would release the funding, which was originally approved under former Republican Governor Bruce Rauner and reauthorized in last year's state operating budget. The money is for the planning and construction of the Discovery Partners Institute, a public-private research and development and workforce development hub led by the U of I and 14 other hubs of a statewide program. Today's announcement is so exciting. It will fast-track construction planning, and we hope to break ground for DPI in a few months, said U of I President Tim Killeen. The DPI campus will get $230 million of the $500 million state investment and will be located in Chicago's South Loop in a development known as the 78, so named because the real estate developer, Related Midwest, has plans to make it the city's 78th neighborhood. Pritzker said through another U of I-led program, the Illinois Innovation Network, the investment's economic impact will be felt statewide. The IIN is a network that includes the DPI and another 14 regional hubs that will get portions of the other $270 million in state funds. Those hubs include partnerships with all of the state's public universities, which will each create specific programs and facilities that fall in line with the IIN's and DPI's innovation, workforce development, and economic growth goals. Chicago Mayor Lori Lightfoot said the project could be a game changer for the city, which will also be making improvements to the area surrounding the new facility. She said it will help the city and state retain students upon graduation. The problem is after we train and educate our students, they leave, she said. She said only about half of the U of I engineering graduates remain in the state, while only 38% of the computer science and engineering student graduates from the U of I's Urbana-Champaign campus stay in the state after graduating. Today is about turning all of that around, she said. Killeen quoted an economic impact study conducted by the Boston Consulting Group that said the project will create 48,000 jobs in the next 10 years, creating an economic impact of $19 billion. And this headline reads, Talk of the Town, Flatville, Small Wonders. School of 51 kids is having a ball cheering on state finalists. In Flatville, there's a space in a glass case at Prairie View Ogden Junior High with a sign that reads, Home of the new 7th grade boys basketball state trophy. The only unknown is whether it is for first or second place. That will be determined tonight at East Peoria Central Junior High when the 22-4 Mustangs face 28-1 West Lincoln Broadwell for the IESA Class 1A state title. Thanks to the 7:30 p.m. tip-off, the players can attend classes before making the trip. A fan bus is taking 40 students to the game. But first, a pep assembly at the School of 51. It is set for 2 p.m. today unless the school's 8th grade boys basketball team advanced to state in Wednesday's scheduled sectional game at Chrisman. If that happened, the fun starts at 1:45. The sound system will be turned up loud as the 10-player 7th grade team is introduced Chicago Bowl style. That means lots of music and cheering from the stands, which figure to be jammed with students and supporters. There are 13 boys in the 7th grade at Prairie View Ogden, and 6 are on the team. 4 6th graders from the South Elementary complete the 7th grade roster. Assistant Principal Carl Hewer raves about the character of the players. "They root each other on, 1 through 10, he said. "You got to give the parents that credit, too. Morals and values," said District Superintendent Vic White. "They also support the school, which helps us join together." The Mustangs trade Normal Epiphany by double digits in the semifinal round before rallying for a 36-35 victory. There were a couple of 6th graders in the locker room in tears because they were so happy to be a part of the team, Hewer said. That goes to show you the buy-in they have and how much it means to them to be called up. Since the big win, there has been a lot of excitement in the hallways, Hewer said. He announced the semifinal results over the loudspeaker Monday, twice. If you are at the school with all of 8 employees, you can't help but know about the team. The cherry on top would be winning it. Nestled in quaint Flatville, the junior high was built in the 1950s. The original tile court in the gym got replaced by a more basketball-friendly wood model in 2005. For home games, the stands are usually packed. Second, third, and fourth graders from the district made posters in art class in support of the players. There is a connection between all of the cities represented in the school, Ogden, Royal, and Flatville. They are very supportive of our school and our sports, White said. We'll have a good following, even at away games. You go to an away game and you feel like you're at your home court because you've got this huge crowd there. On the gym's wall, banners celebrate each state trophy won by the school over the years. There are 9 in all. We've been very, very fortunate to have very good sports programs along with very good academics, White said. The last trophy in boys basketball came in 2009. Current assistant coach Jamie Gilliland was a member of the team. His brother Chase is now the Mustangs' head coach. Past meets present. The school has never won a state championship in any sport. Maybe this time. Right now we've got the cake and the frosting, White said. The cherry on the top would be winning it. It will be one of the last chances to earn a title for White, who is retiring in June after 24 years in charge. Students from the school funnel to 3 different high schools. The bulk of them go to St. Joseph Ogden, with the rest attending Rantoul or Armstrong. Your rival today might be your teammate next season. Earlier in the season, Prairie View Ogden found itself in a close game against St. Joseph Middle School. The Mustangs lost after a late rally. St. Joseph plays for the Class 3A state title today. We root for them, White said. Coy Taylor is looking forward to tonight's title game. One of the top players on the team, he is the son of St. Joseph Ogden girls basketball coach Kevin Taylor. Dad coached the 2009 Prairie View Ogden team that brought home a state trophy. How does Coy Taylor feel about the current run? It's been great. I love it, the 13-year-old said. His dad's past success doesn't add any pressure. I just have a lot of fun, Coy Taylor said. The title game provides a chance to make history with guys he has known since kindergarten. It means a lot, he said. The fact we made it there is just crazy. After clinching a spot in the title game, Taylor and his teammates got plenty of pats on the back from students, teachers, and staff. Everyone was happy for us, Taylor said. The 7th graders move up a class next season. Maybe another trip to the state finals and the need to find more room in the trophy case. It would be nice to do that, Taylor said. Graphic testimony on day 2 for the Michael Henslick trial. Experts lay out how the attack might have played out. By Mary Schenck. Holly Cassano bled to death internally from stabbing injuries that pierced her heart, deflated her lungs, and damaged other internal organs, a forensic pathologist testified on Wednesday. My best estimate, adding them up and counting some of the small wounds, was between 55 and 60, Dr. Scott Denton said of the number of wounds she sustained. The pathologist at the McLean County Morgue, who estimated he's conducted 11,000 autopsies in 23 years, opined that Ms. Cassano died in anywhere from 3 to 7 minutes, following a mighty struggle with her attacker, evidenced by cuts to her forearms and fingers. The pathologist's grim description of what the 22-year-old single mother went through in the last minutes of life came in the second full day of testimony in the murder trial of Michael Henslick. The 31-year-old Mohammed man who lived within blocks of Ms. Cassano and was at large for 9 years has sat stoically taking notes, as 15 witnesses for the state have testified. As Wednesday's session was winding down, jurors heard the first words from Henslick that were recorded by Champaign County Sheriff's investigators who arrested him on August the 28th in 2018. Before getting too far into the five-hour statement taken by three different detectives, Judge Heidi Ladd excused the jurors for the day. They will hear more of that today. Denton's autopsy was conducted on November 3, 2009, a day after Toni Cassano found her deceased daughter almost naked, obviously stabbed and covered in blood on the floor of her bedroom at her home on DuPage Street in the Candlewood Estates Mobile Home Park in Mahomet. Toni Cassano, who also has an adult son, went to her daughter's home because Holly had failed to show up at her mom's earlier that day as promised. Denton's exam revealed that Ms. Cassano was stabbed while on her back and on her stomach. Her forearms had several defensive wounds, suggesting she tried to protect herself from the rain of blows that appeared to have been caused by a steak knife, Denton said. Denton said one of the three stab wounds to her chest penetrated her sternum and heart, causing major internal bleeding. It would have required severe force to accomplish that, he said. She also had wounds below her ribs that damaged her liver and multiple wounds on her back that caused her lungs to collapse. Denton said he found 27 stab wounds on her back, including a cluster of gaping wounds on her lower right back, consistent with a person straddling or sitting on her buttocks, using a right hand to repeatedly stab her. Many of the wounds were different sizes, Denton said, suggesting that she would have been moving in reaction to pain during the contact. However, given the number and position of the wounds on her lower right back, Denton said she likely wasn't moving much at that point, leading him to believe they came near the end of the attack. He also found drops of blood on her legs and foot, though there were no corresponding stab wounds. Either her blood was deposited there or someone else's, he said. Denton also found that she had been sexually assaulted, but was unable to say whether the sex happened before or after she died. Earlier Wednesday, the jury heard from an expert in blood stain pattern analysis that Ms. Cassano was stabbed in the room where her body was found. Illinois State Police Analyst Sergeant Dwayne Morris also testified that her assailant was likely injured above the waist and left a trail of blood throughout her home. Morris's opinions as an expert came over the objection of Henslick's public defenders, Lindsay Yonkus and Andrea Bergstrom. State's Attorney Julia Reitz led the veteran crime scene investigation and bloodstain expert through several pictures taken at the murder scene on November 2nd and 3rd, 2009, asking for his interpretation of what the pools, trails, and droplets of blood meant. Starting in the bedroom where her body was found, Morris said the bloodstains on her bed, the walls, the ceiling, and the floor indicated she was likely stabbed on both the bed and the floor, but he could not say with certainty where the attack began. A trail of blood outside the hallway from her bedroom leading to the kitchen indicated a replenishing source as opposed to blood dripping from an object. An injured person was standing above the sink, Morris opined. There was also a trail of blood leading to the opposite end of the mobile home into a second bathroom near the front door, where blood droplets were also found on the vanity and in the sink. No blood outside suggests something stopped the bloodletting before this person left the scene, Morris testified. In other testimony on Wednesday, Champaign County Sheriff's Deputies Ed Moody and Norman J. R. Meeker both testified about watching Henslick in August of 2018 after he had been developed as a suspect in Ms. Cassano's killing. The investigators said they were among a team tailing him in order to obtain DNA. Moody said he picked up a cigarette that Henslick tossed outside a nail salon in Champaign on August 26, 2018. Meeker said the next day he picked up a butt that Henslick discarded in the parking lot of a grain elevator on Rising Road west of the Champaign, where he pulled in to check a low tire on his car. After obtaining the second butt, Meeker said he logged it into evidence at the office, then drove it directly to the Illinois State Crime Lab in Springfield, where he gave it to DNA analyst Dana Pritchford, who went right to work on it, extracting DNA from saliva on the cigarette butt. Pritchford's testimony linking Henslick's DNA to that found at the crime scene is still to come. Champaign County Sheriff's Evidence Officer Ted Trimble testified about maintaining a chain of custody on the many pieces of evidence collected at Ms. Cassano's home, which are stored in a big vault at the sheriff's office. Trimble said over the years of the open investigation, he took about 150 DNA samples collected from people who knew Ms. Cassano or who lived near her to the state crime lab to rule them out. On the front page also, Target in Champaign. It's business as usual during remodeling job by Deborah Pressey. Target is bringing its next-generation store design to its 25-year-old Champaign location. A building permit for remodeling at the store at 2102 North Prospect Avenue has been issued by the city, and shipping containers are already lined up on one end of the Target parking lot. Company spokeswoman Liz Hancock said the work will be completed this year. The Champaign store remodeling is part of Minneapolis-based Target's plans to update more than 1,000 of its stores this year with its most ambitious redesign to date, she said. Plans for the upgrade in Champaign include the addition of a space for nursing moms, new decor and fixtures, additional mannequins, specialty LED lighting, and an updated order pickup and customer service desk, according to Hancock. Plans also call for dynamic, engaging merchandise displays throughout the store, including home, cosmetics, and apparel departments, to help customers visualize how to put products together, she said. The Champaign store is among more than 300 Target locations being updated this year. Updates are being customized to suit individual markets, so no two store updates will look exactly the same, according to Target. Target stores undergoing remodeling remain open while the work is in progress, though some areas may be closed off to customers, the company said. The Champaign location was built in 1995 amid a retail development boom in that area of Champaign. A second smaller store is set to anchor the first two floors of the Dean Campustown high-rise currently under construction at the southeast corner of 6th and Green Streets. And under the top of the morning, something to get you going today. Jonah Herzog enjoyed a happy homecoming Tuesday at the Crayon Arts Center for the Performing Arts. A second-year member of the acclaimed St. Olaf Choir, the product of Dr. Howard Elementary, Franklin Middle, and Uni High, performed in front of family, friends, and those who showed him the musical ropes while growing up in CU. It was an incredible amount of fun, though when I think of it, it was really more than that, the junior said. It was unforgettably meaningful to be able to give back to so many in the audience who had given me so much over the years. CU was the last, and given conductor Anton Armstrong's U of I connections, obvious stop on St. Olaf's two-week winter tour. That worked out well for Jonah, who was introduced by the conductor as the hometown kid after the impressive show, coming soon in these pages, John Frayne's review. Jonah's parents, Andrea and Steve, and siblings Emma and Daniel were in the crowd, as were many of his classmates and instructors who played a heavy role in him earning a spot with the 108-year-old choir. This may not be Chicago, Mom said, but CU is very lucky to have countless talented teachers, an abundance of opportunities in music, and a community commitment to the arts that has given people like Jonah priceless experiences that have shaped his life. It wasn't Jonah's first time in Cranert's spotlight, but likely his most enjoyable. I was definitely a bit nervous before and during the concert, the tenor said. I think a lot of it just has to do with how many people I knew in the audience and that I wanted to impress. And looking at the history. In 1920, the first call for candidates for the 1920 football team was issued when Coach Robert Zupke stated that all prospective varsity and freshman varsity men should report to the Engine Annex. All men who were to attend that gathering, one of the most important of the year, were required to carry with them a pad and a pencil, the coach stated, for the purpose of taking down plays and signals that would be used in the 1920 season. In 1970, Ralph T. Smith, seeking to retain his U.S. Senate seat, came to Champaign as part of his flying whistle stop, speaking engagement. Smith said he was happy to have Vice President Spiro Agnew's endorsement over William Rentschler, the other Republican Senate hopeful. In 2015, plans for a 24.5-mile recreation trail on the old rail line between Urbana and Kickapoo State Park keep chugging along. The Champaign County Conservation and Design Foundation said it had secured a lease for the right-of-way, a critical and long-sought step toward acquisition and development of what could be a signature destination attraction for East Central Illinois. We had to go back and start from scratch a couple of times, but now we really have something we can set our sights on, said Lott Thomas, the Champaign attorney working on behalf of the foundation. Ooh, it's hard to believe it's been that long. In international history, today's highlight. On February 13, 1945, during World War II, Allied planes began bombing the German city of Dresden. The Soviets captured Budapest, Hungary, from the Germans. On this date, in 1633, Italian astronomer Galileo Galilei arrived in Rome for a trial before the Inquisition, accused of defending the Copernican theory that the Earth revolved around the Sun instead of the other way around. Galileo was found vehemently suspect of heresy and ended up being sentenced to a form of house arrest. In 1861, Abraham Lincoln was officially declared winner of the 1860 presidential election as electors cast their ballots. In 1991, during Operation Desert Storm, Allied warplanes destroyed an underground shelter in Baghdad that had been identified as a military command center. Iraqi officials said that 500 civilians were killed. Teacher of the Week, right where she belongs. Michelle Coe knew as a young Paxton resident that she wanted to pursue a career that helped people, and she found the perfect job for that outlet. As one parent put it, the Clara Peterson Elementary School teacher goes out of her way to help children in ways that don't necessarily fall into her job description. She finds her work important because there is no one more important than kids. I think all children are deserving of a quality education. I enjoy watching kids grow educationally, emotionally, and socially. I became a teacher because I have always enjoyed kids. I started babysitting at a young age and was always around kids. I worked as a lifeguard for many years and enjoyed teaching kids to swim. I knew in grade school that I wanted to help kids learn and knew that someday I would teach. I love to watch them grow as a student. Living in a small school district, I love the fact that I can watch the kids mature into young adults. Since I've been teaching for over 30 years, I'm now having students who are children of former students. I really enjoy that, and the kids always want to know how their parents were in school. My favorite lesson that I teach is, this isn't really one lesson, but a whole day. I have put together a Career on Wheels event for the past 19 years. I contact as many people as I can to come to the school with their work vehicle and talk to the kids about their career. This is for all of the 3rd through 5th grade students, and we spend the afternoon outside learning. I rotate the presenters so if the student is here all 3 years, they do not see any of the same careers. I've had a monster truck, a helicopter, a fire truck, police, limo, semi-driver, conservation, dog trainer, U of I vet, just to name a few. It's a great day, and the kids love it. My most fulfilling moments on the job are when I run into former students and they talk to me about all the fun they had while I was their teacher. They remember details about the school year that I don't even remember. Something else I'm passionate about is I love to cook and bake, especially my Texas sheet cake. I am close to retirement and look forward to traveling. My favorite teacher and subject of study was my 3rd grade teacher, Mrs. Abramson, at Westlawn School in Paxton. I loved math, and she pushed me to do my best. I also love the fact that I was able to take my class to the nursing home one Christmas, and she happened to be residing there. She was 102, and she actually remembered who I was. And this from the Centennial English Classes, Trip South Offers Hope by Alexandria Coburn. Creating a more peaceful Champaign, a more peaceful Centennial, a more peaceful community. That's what Centennial High School English teachers Jennifer Hindus and Jessica Hutchison hope to accomplish by taking 13 students on a peace pilgrimage to Atlanta for a 2-day intensive nonviolence training. Hosted by the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, the students will be trained in Kingian nonviolence, a philosophy of nonviolent conflict reconciliation based on the work of Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr. For Hindus, the idea behind this trip can be summed up in one word. I was looking for hope. As a teacher, it's really hard to answer questions that are unanswerable. Why do people hate me? Why do we have global warming? What about police brutality, she said. I don't know. I'm one human, and it can feel really hopeless at times. From there, Hindus decided to research peace work and peaceful people who have come before us, and one small detail stood out. They all began their work at a young age, which prompted Hindus to ask, how do we get young people involved in this movement of nonviolence and peace? The trip is hosted by Centennial's After School Empower Club, which works to dismantle rape culture and gender equality issues. Most of the students heading to Atlanta today are members of Empower, but others volunteered, had violence impact their lives in some way, or were nominated by school administrators. With every trip comes a price tag, but Hindus said all participants have been actively raising funds to keep costs as low as possible. Every student attending is on a scholarship, so no one has to pay full price for the trip. Overall, the students can't wait. Something I'm looking forward to is being able to meet some of the people who are going with me on the trip and listening to their stories and experiences they've had with violence and how this can change it, said Fatima Ramirez, a sophomore who also hopes to pass along what she's learned to her siblings. Paige Dixon, a freshman, hopes to find a lot of strength in peace. I feel like the only time I feel really strong is when I'm violent or angry, and I want to be able to be like, no, I can be peaceful, and really use that to my advantage. I'm hoping to gain skills to diffuse violent and possibly violent situations before they spark up, said Ellison Raddick, a sophomore. Coming from Centennial, we see a lot of that, and so I want to be able to help out our community that way. I'm also really excited to go to the Civil Rights Museum because I want to learn about our country's history with peace and how we've gotten through the hardest times. After the students return, they'll have the opportunity to meet with the school's administration team and different community groups and leaders to share what they have learned. The bus leaves from Centennial High School at 7:20 this morning and returns Sunday. As for making the peace pilgrimage an annual trip, Hindus said, I want this to grow. I want to bring 55 students, and that's scary to say. This is the scariest thing I've ever done as a teacher, and I do big events at Centennial, but not like this. Two boys charged with hold-up using a BB gun by Mary Schenck. Two boys were ordered held in the juvenile detention center on Wednesday after a judge heard probable cause that they robbed another boy of his cell phone at gunpoint. Assistant State's Attorney Alex Boyd said the 13-year-old Urbana boy and his 12-year-old co-defendant from Champaign were charged Wednesday with aggravated robbery after Urbana police learned that the gun they used was a BB gun. Boyd said the boys and their 14-year-old victim were all at the Urbana Free Library on Green Street about 6 p.m. Tuesday when the boys approached the victim and demanded his cell phone. When he refused to hand it over, one of the boys pulled out a gun and showed him while the other took the phone from the victim's pocket. The robbers then ran off. Boyd said the victim's mother picked him up shortly after, and upon learning what had happened, she and her son spotted the two youths at a nearby gas station at Lincoln Avenue and Green Street. The mother confronted the pair and got her son's phone back. Then she called the police, who found the two walking behind a house in that area. Police also found the BB gun, Boyd said. Judge Tom DeFonis found that it was a matter of immediate and urgent necessity that the boys be held pending a February 20th court hearing. And I think we'll stop right now for part one, and stay tuned because we're going to be right back with part two.